I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's May 16th, and we have a lot to talk about. Today, we're going to wrap up our coverage of the Pathways to Cures Global Summit that took place just a couple of weeks ago in New York. If you happen to miss last week's episode, I'll recommend that you listen to that episode of Real Talk MS, episode number 297, before you listen to this episode. And you'll find a link to episode 297 in today's show notes. If you did listen to last week's episode, I think it bears repeating that this event that brought together representatives from 15 countries, 20 endorsing MS organizations, and 189 leaders from across the MS movement, who were all focused on stopping MS progression, restoring lost function, and ending MS forever, for me, it was nothing less than a historic moment. But before we get to my coverage of the Pathways to Cures Global Summit, something happened just yesterday that I want to share with you. Some of you might remember that back in March 2019, a research team published a study on the prevalence of MS in the United States. This study received a lot of attention because it had been decades since the prevalence of MS in the United States had been measured, and those decades-old numbers showed that about 400,000 Americans were living with MS. The updated study showed that the actual number was almost 1 million. That's a big jump, and it made a big difference, not only in raising awareness of MS, but in public policy, where it had an impact on funding for MS research and allocating federal, state, and local resources aimed at supporting people who were living with MS. If you'd like to hear more about that study, please check out Real Talk MS, episode number 81, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. But let's get back to yesterday, because yesterday, a study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and this study looked at the prevalence of MS in the United States by race, ethnicity, age, sex, and geographic region. The study results are fascinating. They certainly laid to rest the myth that was once assumed to be true, that multiple sclerosis was a disease that affected people of European, primarily Western European, descent. In other words, for the longest time, people, including healthcare professionals, believed that MS only affected white people. And because this was a belief among physicians, including neurologists, it meant that it could take years for members of an ethnic or racial minority population to even be diagnosed with MS, let alone treated. And sometimes, it meant that members of these underserved communities were never properly diagnosed. Well, I'd like to tell you that this was all in the distant past, but as some of you can personally attest to, that wouldn't be true. There are still neurologists, perhaps somewhere in solo practice in a rural area, who still believe that MS is a white woman's disease. That's why this updated study that looks at the prevalence of MS through the lens of race, ethnicity, age, sex, and geography is so important. Because, once again, this study will raise awareness and rebalance the equity associated with distributing resources to support everyone who may be living with MS. The results of the study show that while MS does impact white women, it also impacts blacks or African Americans, members of the Hispanic or Latinx community, and members of other ethnic minorities. And the study provides some real insight into the geographic distribution of MS among these racial and ethnic groups. We're going to take a deeper dive into this study in next week's episode of the podcast, but this is an important study, the results of which I've been looking forward to seeing published for a while now. And I wanted to make sure that the study was on your radar just as soon as those results were published. As I mentioned a moment ago, in today's episode of Real Talk MS, we're wrapping up our coverage of the Pathways to Cures Global Summit. This event, It was one of those rare times where I felt privileged to be in the room with about 200 of the top MS experts in the world, talking about the steps they were going to collaboratively take and the research gaps that needed to be filled in to achieve the goals of the Pathways to Cures initiative. One theme that was part of the conversation at the summit was that the goals of the initiative, the cures that would come out of this extraordinary global effort, had to be made available to everyone living with MS. Anne Helm, the head of research and access at the MS International Federation, gave a presentation that really underscored the fact that despite the remarkable progress that's been made in treating MS, that treatment varies in different parts of the world. Anne reminded us that global challenges require global collaboration, and if those collaborations are going to be most successful, they're going to put people affected by MS at the heart, at the center of global MS research. I had an opportunity to chat with Anne about some of these issues. I'm speaking with Dr. Anne Helm from the MS International Federation. Dr. Helm got things off to a start this morning, talking about the progress in treating MS that's already been made. I guess one of the questions I would have specifically as a representative of the MSIF, can you talk a little bit about how treatment in MS varies in different parts of the world?
Thank you, John. And that's a really interesting question. It varies hugely in different parts of the world. One of the things that the MS International Federation does is run a large global survey which collects data for the what we call the Atlas of MS. And some of the questions that we ask countries to provide information on is about their access to disease-modifying therapies for MS. So through this collection of data, we can see which countries have access to all the approved therapies for MS and which countries have actually access to none of them. And so, yes, there is huge variation in different regions of the world. And when you compare sort of the high income countries versus the low and middle income countries.
I think it's important at a meeting like this, when we're talking about global collaboration, we recognize that all parties coming to the table may not be representing the same sort of MS journey on behalf of patients, may not be representing the same access to care or treatment from one country to another. And sometimes that's something that, well, I just wanted to make clear to my listeners that they understood that it really does vary depending on where you may live and where you may work. One of the things you talked about today in terms of global collaboration was something called multi-act. You know, we often talk about putting the patient at the center of not only treatment, but research as well. It's a conversation that doesn't get translated into action enough, but multi-act is a step toward making that very actionable. Can you talk a little bit about what multi-act is and the impact it can have on research?
So multi-act is a framework or a set of guidance that can help organizations and these sort of big collaborations really think carefully about who to involve, when to involve them, how to involve them throughout the whole process of research. And I think one of the things it makes very clear is that even at that very initial stage of setting up any type of research project, you need to be talking to people with the lived experience of whatever condition you're researching into. So they need to be part of that conversation about setting the vision, setting the strategy for that project, being part of the overall governance of it. Because that's going to help ensure that the outcome is actually going to be meeting the needs of the people that you were doing the research to try and help. So that is really what multi-act is trying to do. And then it sets out, so not just at the start of it, but all the way through a large research initiative, saying that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to how you engage people with lived experience, but you think really carefully at each stage of the project, okay, which population of people do we need to go out and talk to at this point, or where do we need to go and get that extra advice, or who might be useful to pilot test a particular intervention or something. And so, yes, it's really trying to make sure that there's a very thoughtful and considered and sort of scientific approach to how we engage, and not just people with a lived experience, but all of the different players in research. So the funders, the private sector, the patient organizations, the researchers, the doctors, whoever might be needing to be part of delivering the research initiative overall.
Well, I think you make an excellent point that everyone who is a stakeholder, everyone who is involved in a research initiative, the more they can be a part of that process where they can add value based upon the expertise that they bring to the table, can't help but make the project better.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Ann Helm, thank you for all you do for people living with MS literally around the world. And thanks so much for taking a couple of minutes to talk with me.
Not at all. Thank you very much.
One of the things that I talked about with Ann was the importance of seeing people affected by MS not only as a source of data, but how engaging them in every aspect of an MS research project makes that project better. Paola Zaratan from the Italian MS Society is one of the leading voices in the world when it comes to what she describes as the science of research governance. Paola is the chief architect of MultiACT, a framework for engaging all the stakeholders, including people affected by MS, in every phase of health research and innovation. MultiACT has been endorsed by the European Brain Council, and I talked with Paola about the science of research governance and MultiACT. Paola Zaratan from the Italian MS Society is here at the Pathways to Cures Global Summit. And Paola, in your presentation this morning, you talked about the science of research governance. That's going to be a term that I don't think a lot of my listeners are familiar with, although they should be. So maybe you can explain what that is.
Thank you very much for your question, because science of research governance is near my heart. It's made up of different components, I would say. You need to have in place, modality and science that will help you to enable a unique ecosystem between research and care. What I mean with this? You need a bridge for research to walk across and become a cure. And to build this bridge, you need the participation, active participation of people affected by MS. They can make a huge difference in building this bridge. But to achieve this goal, you need science, you need the model, you need the scientific framework to engage and to make out of their contribution the best. And this is why, we have been inspired by European Commission in following the responsible research innovation principle that help us to build this bridge, help us to work with people affected by MS, to co-create with them to build the bridge. Perhaps it's not completely built, but I'm confident that we are in the right direction. The other component is the science of collaboration. Why? Because patient engagement is not only the business of patient, of people affected by MS. It's something as a responsibility of the other stakeholder to make sure that people affected by MS will be part of our research agenda. So putting together all this framework, putting together all this need, we need to invest on science of research governance. We need to invest in making sure that all the relevant stakeholders are engaged. First of all, people affected by MS. We need to make sure that they will see their the return of engagement. They will see that by participating, things will change and will have a greater impact of research. They have to see that we are able to build this bridge.
That framework that you designed to facilitate that bridge is called MultiACT. Can you talk a little bit about MultiACT?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are many ways to engage in patients, and there are many models that have been used in research to engage patients. But I think that MultiACT, that is a model, a framework that has been supported by European Commission, that is important to understand in which part, in which phases of research people affected by MS can give their contribution as any other stakeholders, because this is going to be the same for researchers or for other stakeholders. And once we have, identified these phases of research, then we can work together to develop, design an engagement plan in order for people affected by MS to see their impact to research. But there is another important concept that MultiACT is bringing to the science of patient input, science with patient input, that is representativeness. Till now, we used to ask one people affected by MS to be at the table to give advice, and it's fine, but it's not enough. And this is why MultiACT has developed this new governance body that is named Engagement Coordination Team, because the role of the member of the Engagement Coordination Team is to recognize the kind of, what are the people affected by MS that have a relevant experiential knowledge to be engaged in a given research project. And it's their responsibility to engage the relevant community in order to have a representativeness of their experiential knowledge, to have not only one people affected by MS advice about what research should do, but all relevant community. And this is an important role for people affected by MS. Only them can do it. Only them can have such a kind of responsibility.
I agree. Paola, I want to thank you on behalf of everyone affected by MS for bringing us all to the table and involving people in every phase of the research process. Once upon a time, participating in research meant being donating your data, being a data point.
Absolutely.
And thanks to your work, to a large extent.
It's a pleasure. And, after several years experience in multiple sclerosis, first in pharma and then in a profit organization, it's amazing how the contribution of people affected by MS can change research and can increase the impact of research.
Well, thank you for being here at the Pathways to Cures Global Summit. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Thank you so much.
At the Pathways to Cures Global Summit, I also had a chance to connect or reconnect with some of the top clinician researchers in the world. Dr. Peter Calabresi is the director of the Multiple Sclerosis Center at Johns Hopkins Medicine. Dr. Calabresi is also the principal investigator on several clinical trials, and he oversees research projects designed to create new anti-inflammatory and neuroprotective therapies. Dr. Calabresi is leading research focused on validating a protein in the blood called neurofilament light chain as a biomarker for MS, and he and I had a chance to talk at the Global Summit. We're talking with Dr. Peter Calabresi from Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Calabresi, we're here discussing pathways to cures, and I'm just curious, how do you imagine someone living with MS should be processing this notion, this initiative, Pathways to Cures?
I think people should come away realizing that there's great hope for the disease right now. We've come a long ways. We've identified many targets that have translated into drugs for relapsing remitting MS, and now there are tens, and scores of people working on progressive MS, and we've made a lot of progress. So although it's frustrating for people who have disability and we don't have any treatments necessarily for them right now, I would say that a lot of progress has been made. The ground has been set for future therapies, and I think the future is very bright. So I'm feeling very optimistic about where we're headed in the next 10 years.
Well, I, for one, am very glad to hear that. I know my listeners are going to be as well. When we talk about progress, one of the areas that has been a focus where we're seeing some progress being made is in the areas of biomarkers. Can you explain to my listeners how being able to identify biomarkers for MS is going to impact treatment?
Yes, biomarkers are critical for not only diagnosis, but for prognosis and monitoring. So the big one now that is being commercialized this year is neurofilament light, or what we call NFL. And many groups around the world have basically found the same data that NFL levels are elevated in people with MS, more so when there is ongoing disease activity. And so it has concurrent validity. It's a quantitative measure of how much inflammation is going on causing nerve damage. But it also has predictive validity, so that we know that people who have elevated neurofilament, especially several tests in a row, are more likely to accrue disability. Now, the good news is that there's already data that if you intervene with a high efficacy drug, that you can change the course of that. So a clinician can start to use this and see someone who may be at high risk for having future disability, intervene and see if the treatment is working because the neurofilament levels drop. Now, that all works really well right now, apparently, in relapsing remitting MS, but we need the same kinds of biomarkers for progressive MS, because instead of having the peaks of inflammation that result in high levels that we can measure in the bloodstream, in progressive MS, everything's happening in a slow, insidious fashion, and we need to be able to interrogate mechanisms by which that's happening. There's some promise. Some of the glial cells that we know are participating in progressive MS release products that we can measure in the bloodstream, like GFAP, and that's starting to show a signal. But I think it's going to be perhaps a panel of biomarkers for progressive MS, and we still have more work to be done there.
You know, the goals of the Pathways to Cures initiative are to stop MS in its tracks, to restore lost function, and to end MS forever. How do you define cure?
For me, a cure is relieving the suffering that young people have to endure, the uncertainty of the disease. We all have something. We're all going to die. So I think of it as living a good, happy, high quality of life. And I think we're getting there. Many of our patients who are get on the high efficacy therapies early are doing extremely well. Now that they have the luxury of having these available right at the beginning of their disease. And we're starting to make inroads on people in the sort of interim period, 10 or 20 years into the disease. But we, of course, still have work to be done. So I say that if we look back, we've come a long ways, but we're setting the stage for the next generation of therapies that will impact on the progressive folks.
I really appreciate that you called out the uncertainty of living with MS and what's that like. I think a lot of times when we talk about multiple sclerosis, we tend to talk about it either in terms of symptoms or progression. And frankly, I think for an awful lot of people, the most difficult aspect of living with MS is not knowing how you're going to be tomorrow when you wake up, not knowing, you know, living under that healthcare sort of Damocles, where you just don't know if a symptom will get worse, if a new symptom might develop, and what the future might look like. But I appreciate you calling out the uncertainty. I think it's probably something that isn't talked about enough and perhaps weighs on people's minds more than we may realize.
I think it's a really great point. And some of the tools that we use are very biologically based, but not necessarily function and outcome based. And so we need to understand that. We need to understand that on a hot day, some of my patients can't walk in from the parking lot to the supermarket. And for them, that feels like it's an exacerbation of their disease, although we would call that a transient physiologic recrudescence of symptoms. So there needs to be more connection between the healthcare providers and people who suffer from these diseases. But I think we're actually making inroads. I think that more and more meetings like this, where we have all the stakeholders at the table, really help make progress.
Well, again, speaking of progress, Dr. Peter Calabrese, thank you for all the progress you have been responsible for to date and all the rest we can look forward to. Appreciate all that you do for people who are living with MS, both in the clinic and the lab. And thanks so much for spending a couple minutes talking with me.
Well, thank you. I'm really privileged to be part of the team.
Dr. Daniel Antoneda is an associate professor of neurology and medicine at the Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine at Case Western Reserve University, and a clinician researcher at the Cleveland Clinic Neurological Institute's Mellon Center for Multiple Sclerosis. Among his research activities, Dr. Antoneda is the lead principal investigator for DELIVER-MS, a large international multi-center study that's analyzing the benefits of treating MS by starting someone on a very safe, moderately effective disease-modifying therapy and then only escalating to a stronger therapy when the current therapy seems to no longer be working for them, versus treating MS by starting someone on a more powerful, high-efficacy disease-modifying therapy. I had a chance to ask Dr. Antoneda how someone who's living with MS should be thinking about the Pathways to Cures initiative. We're talking with neurologist Dr. Daniel Antoneda from the Cleveland Clinic. And Daniel, you know, this has been talked about as convening the world to take us to the next evolutionary stage of the Pathways to Cures research initiative. Let me ask you, how should someone who's living with MS think about Pathways to Cures?
Yeah, so thanks so much, John, for the opportunity to talk to you. And also, it's really great being here and being able to share with, you know, all the stakeholders, the individuals, people with MS, and a lot of our research collaborators and scientists at this meeting. So I think, you know, from, you know, a person living with MS, the perspective of what this meeting means is, you know, I think the first thing we try to recognize is the fact that we've come a long way. And MS is now a treatable disease. And what we're trying to do is trying to figure out what's the parts of MS that we can't treat. And then second, how can we stop the disease altogether? And I think that these questions are things that you have to propose with a big idea in mind, really trying to change and revolutionize what we're doing. So take things to the next level. I think that when we think about getting research scientists together in a room, sometimes we think about a dry meeting that might be, you know, entangled with, like, you know, some science issues. But the truth is that a lot of what happens at this meeting is the voice of people with MS. What do we need to do differently so that we can actually eradicate the disease completely? And I think that really we need, you know, the voice of individuals with MS to remind us that we have to be bold in our questions. We have to try to answer these problems with, you know, all the players in mind. So it's really a different approach to how, you know, research normally is conducted, which is normally people sit down and decide, oh, I'm going to study this or I'm going to study that. I'm going to publish a paper on this. Here, it's not about that. It's really about how can we transform the field? How can we make living with MS better for all of those who are affected by it? And how can we prevent it from occurring altogether?
Well, I think to your point, here we are halfway through the first day of the meeting. And the first part of the day was a presentation on exactly how people affected by MS get integrated into the research process, really fully engaged as opposed to being data points. And then the next conversation was about stopping MS. And what impressed me is the focus was not only on stopping MS for people who have been diagnosed and are somewhere along the typical MS journey that we tend to think about, but stopping MS among people who haven't been diagnosed, who actually have not experienced a single symptom yet, that prodromal phase of MS. Fascinating conversation, a really fascinating kind of focus. It expands that timeline where we typically think your MS journey begins on your day of diagnosis. Well, I think that certainly is a milestone that every patient remembers to the minute, if not the second, when that occurs. But now we're seeing that efforts are being made to intervene, so maybe you don't experience that day.
Yeah, that's correct. I was just asked, what does a cure mean to me? And to me, a cure means that I don't have to diagnose any more MS patients. So we avoid that, that experience altogether. And I think that's something that, with certain developments in the field, I think the first thing we need to do is identify who are the people who are at risk of developing MS, right? Even if they haven't developed it yet, first we need to identify them. And then we need to develop the strategies so that we can actually do something to prevent the disease from occurring altogether.
Well, Dr. Daniel Antoneta, thanks for all you do every day to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for stopping by to talk with me.
Yeah, thanks so much. It was a pleasure as always.
I also had the chance to reconnect with Dr. Mitzi Joy Williams at the Global Summit. Dr. Williams is a clinician researcher who has focused her research on identifying disparities in MS care among historically underserved populations. I asked Dr. Williams what the word cure meant to her, and we talked about the importance of ensuring that the Pathways to Cures initiative doesn't leave anyone behind. You've probably already heard me say that the MS Society has convened the best and the brightest to be attending Pathways to Cures Global Summit. I would say my next guest, Dr. Mitzi Joy Williams, completely defines what the best and the brightest really means in MS research as well as clinical work. Dr. Williams, how should someone who's living with MS think about Pathways to Cures?
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. This is so exciting. Just the fact that we are now talking about looking at ways to cure MS. I think for a person living with MS, I think it's important to recognize that there are still some steps that need to be taken, some collaborative efforts that need to be done with summits like this to really better understand MS across different populations. But I think the exciting piece is that we're working towards that and that there are, multiple ways that we're looking at trying to end MS as well as trying to restore function. And so I think that's the exciting piece, right, is that now this is part of the conversation where it was not part of the conversation even 10 years ago.
As you mentioned, the idea of cures is a new part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. What does a cure mean to you?
Yeah, so a cure can mean different things, right? I think at this stage of the game, a cure to me as a clinician would mean I catch someone very early in their MS and I'm able to stop their MS in its tracks. I think that there are, successful examples of this that I've seen in clinical practice, when we're able to get a person on the right treatment for them. They often do very well. So my patients are now very functional. They're raising their kids. They're getting their PhDs and, remaining employed. So for me, that's a cure. I mean, ultimately, I think in the grand scheme of things, a cure is being able to identify people before they have symptoms, when they're at that risk factor stage, and to be able to stop disease progression at that point.
A key area of your research has focused on identifying disparities in MS care, mm-hmm. Looking at everything from access to care to quality of care affecting historically underserved communities. Yeah. How do you process the goals of the Pathways to Cures initiative to stop MS in its tracks, restore lost function, and end MS forever? How do you process those goals as they relate to members of minority communities in light of the disparities that you've identified in your work?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. So one of the things that we definitely, I think, need a little bit more emphasis on is diversity, right? So sometimes when you get in a global setting, where, for instance, in certain parts of the world, you don't have as many underrepresented populations, you don't have the same history of disparities like we have here in the States, it can kind of get lost in the sauce, so to speak, that conversation. But I think that, in order to really find a cure for MS, everyone has to be included in that solution. For instance, there are not a lot of people from the continent of Africa, as a part of this meeting, right? So we're missing a whole continent. And I think that we have to begin to reconcile those things. You know, certainly we have to continue to move the research forward, but we also have to kind of take that pause to say, okay, what are we missing and how do we really make this inclusive of everyone in the world who has multiple sclerosis? And I think we have a little ways to go where that's concerned.
Probably do, but I think focusing on the fact that that is a necessary part of this effort is so important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with me.
Thank you so much for inviting me, John. Always a pleasure.
In the coming weeks, I'm hoping to catch up with some of the other experts who were presenters at the Pathways to Cures Global Summit. People like Professor Wei Yang, Professor Gianvito Martino, Dr. John DeLuca, Dr. Anthony Feinstein, Dr. Ellen Mowry, and Dr. Kathy Zukowski, who all talked about the current state of the science when it comes to restoring lost function through myelin repair, inducing neuroprotection, and developing functional recovery through behavioral changes. National MS Society President and CEO Cindy Zaghi-Boilo opened the Pathways to Cures Global Summit saying, quote, "We've never been better positioned to change the world for people with MS." And as the summit came to an end, co-chair Professor Alan Thompson summed up much of what had been proposed in just four words: communication, coordination, collaboration, and commitment. My takeaway is that these four words are the fuel that's going to drive the biggest global MS research collaboration the world has ever seen. And it's going to change everything. That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/298. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into your email or text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll do me a huge favor and choose to participate in the Real Talk MS Listener Survey. The survey will take you less than 5 minutes to complete, and you could win a $100 Amazon gift card. You'll find the survey at realtalkms.com/survey, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.